I'm your host, Hannah Colton, glad to be broadcasting live from my living room this morning. Yesterday, the number of coronavirus cases in New Mexico was up to 363. That's just 2.5% of people testing positive out of a total of about 14,000 tests that have been administered statewide. And as we near the one-month mark of living with COVID-19 in New Mexico, we're checking in with state educators and state and federal officials to hear how they're handling the latest challenges. What kinds of support do you really want to see from state agencies? If you've got kids in school, are you happy with the communications they've gotten from their district or teachers? How should digital learning work, and how does that compare to what schools are currently ready to provide? Send questions to letstalk@kunm.org or call in live during the show this morning, 505-277-5866. I want to welcome on the line Santa Fe Public Schools Superintendent Veronica Garcia. Good morning.
Good morning.
So Santa Fe Public Schools started their first day of distance learning on Monday. How's that going?
It's going really well. You know, obviously there's always bumps in the road, right, when you try something new. But I have to tell you, I was overwhelmed by the positivity and how smooth it actually went. We do daily check-ins with our principals and district leaders at the end of the day. And on the first day, I was expecting to hear this went wrong and that went wrong. And instead, I just heard so much positivity. And I want to talk about it also, not just from, you know, what we call the affective domain around teaching and learning and cognitive pursuits, but the affective domain, which is the social emotional. And that almost brought me to tears to hear teachers happy to connect with their kids, kids happy to connect with their teachers, students happy to see each other again. They miss their friends. They miss school. They miss that connection. Kids being excited about, quote unquote, what to wear for the first day of school. I heard an anecdote about one little classroom where they sang happy birthday to a child. And it may seem like no big deal, but when you think of the trauma of the pandemic and the uncertainty and children not quite understanding what's going on, that social-emotional connection is so important. And kids feel safe at school, right? And so this was another extension of that. And so it's been really going really, really well.
Excellent. That's good to hear.
Questions, I can tell you more.
Well, so how are you training teachers and students on the new online platforms? Using Google Classroom, Zoom, right?
Right. So what we did, we were on spring break. I've got to look at my calendar here. We went on spring break the week of the 9th, I believe. I'm getting confused what days this is. And so we for those 2 weeks of strategies to better train. And then the week of the 23rd, we trained our principals on those modules, but not only on how to use the materials, we also trained and talked to them about the change process, right? Implementing massive change has huge emotional and psychological impacts on people. And to be cognizant of that with our teachers and with our students, right? Because we're all having to adjust to something new and massive, right? Because we're not built to be a district online learning district, right? Where all the courses are all online. This is providing remote learning. And it's a very different model than, say, or even to move one school when you're moving, you know, we have 30 school sites in the Santa Fe Public Schools. So it's a mess. It's more complex. I'm sure Albuquerque is even more complex than we are, right? But it's easy to say, like, and I'm not going to say it's easy, but I know people have pointed out, well, private schools, you know, St. Pius, the Academy, they were very able to do that. The scale makes it even more complex. So we had training on the 23rd. With our principals, and the morning of the 24th, we brought in, then our teachers had training the 24th, 25th, 26th, and 27th. And they were able to practice, to learn how to use all the different tools. I have to tell you, our IT team, and our CNI team, our IT team led by Dr. Ryan and Dr. Tom Ryan and Dr. Neil Weaver, and our CNI team led by Linda Sink and Dr. Melissa Lomax, and everybody else on the leadership team and their staffs, what they did to be able to get this up and running, to be able to train everybody, because training is key. And then we launched the program on the 30th. So we're well ahead of the game. We have to submit our continuous learning plan to the public education department, but we are already doing it. And I just couldn't be prouder of how much the leadership and the hard work of our teachers, our principals, and the district staff to make this work for our children. Now, we have
Let me pause you there. We are speaking to Santa Fe Superintendent Veronica Garcia. If you want to call in this morning, any questions about distance learning, online platforms, it's 277-5866. And Superintendent Garcia, you're educating a generation of students who are digital natives, right? And likely a lot of them more tech savvy than their parents and a lot of their teachers. What do you say to educators or parents or others who sort of have the mindset or have never used these platforms and think that, you know, some things just can't be taught online?
Well, because, you know, they're thinking of it in a very narrow point of view, right? Now, because we can teach physical education, we can do speech therapy through various platforms, right? Using like a telehealth model. Mm-hmm. We can conference call. The Zoom meetings that we've been having with staff, I see everybody. We can talk to each other, right, within a classroom. It's just that we can't physically be together. But these virtual environments, you know, now, are we a virtual district? Are we going to continue in this mode? No, but I think some of the lessons that we've learned around equity, right? I might be able to provide enrichment and tutoring, art, and we always offer art and music in the regular program, but let's say we wanted to add to that after school for some of my lower income communities that don't have access to private art and dance and music lessons and chess clubs and those sorts of things. We may be able to use these tools to address equity in a way that we haven't before. Now, what I was going to say earlier is that teachers, like kids have appointments with counselors where they may do a one-on-one video chat, right, and be able to have that support, that social-emotional support, or connect with a social worker. Teachers can work with kids in smaller groups. Physical education can be done in that manner, right? Just how many of us have ever done an exercise video, right? Our biggest challenge, and I think for all of New Mexico, is access to broadband and internet access. And if you live in an area that has poor cell phone service, a hotspot's not going to help you. And so when we talk
right,
about
so that was my
learning,
next question. You know, the state has a constitutional obligation to provide K-12 education, and now we're in the situation where internet is necessary to make that happen. Some people are saying it's time for the state to consider internet a basic right and provide it for free. What do you think about that?
Well, it does make sense, does it not?
Right.
That it would be just, you know, it might be considered as a utility, you know, where there could be subsidies for, you know, people that are poor that cannot afford it. But I think broadband, I mean, even if you provided the service, if you don't have connection to broadband, so I think the state really has to work on that. And I think we have to work with our tribal leaders. Again, I'm putting on my former Secretary of Education hat, right, back in those days. But but those are things that I think have to be worked out at a state level with a state CIO and, you know, consultation with tribal leaders in terms of how do we create that access, right, and ensure that people have access to broadband. In Santa Fe, we've used our E-rate dollars to help lay more fiber and also partner with the city to provide more access. My school district encompasses Santa Fe County, and there are areas of Santa Fe County that do not have access to broadband or do not have even good cell service. So we will have to look at our remote learning access to the KNME programming on do I have it right? KNME?
Yeah, the NMPBS.
Yes, access to that, learning packets that we can mail home, phone conferencing, right? So we have to be creative to come up with workarounds to be able to serve our families right now. And I know that that is a struggle across rural New Mexico of being able to access their families. But these are extraordinary times right now, correct?
Right.
In terms of what we're dealing with. Also, we have Wi-Fi where kids can come down and when they go get their grab-and-go bags for lunch, could connect to, while they're in their car, download content, you know, using the Wi-Fi. And then they can go home and work on those lessons and then upload when they have connection to Wi-Fi. And there's Wi-Fi.
And do all your students have laptops?
Huh?
How many of your students have laptops at home? Have you issued computers?
All of our students have iPads or Chromebooks. All of our students do.
Wow.
And that's because of an educational technology note, thanks to the voters of Santa Fe County, the legislature, and I can't remember in what year, allowed districts to go out to their communities that have the bonding capacity to pass an educational technology note. And I'm very grateful to the voters of Santa Fe County that have supported that effort. And so because of that, we are able to fund iPads and Chromebooks for all our students. And also, we have digital coaches at each school that work with our teachers and our students to help them access that. When you asked about additional support, not only did we provide comprehensive training, each school has access to their digital coach that can talk them through, you know, issues or how to better convert content and be able to provide it in this new format.
I see. And what other feedback are you hearing about challenges or things that people are excited about from teachers or families right now?
Well, I think, as I said, the affective, first of all, just the human connection and the joy of kids being able to connect with their teachers and kids being able to connect with each other. That was super positive. But the creativity has been amazing of things that our teachers have been able to do. One of the challenges, obviously, because what we did in our pandemic preparedness planning, my whole district is running remotely. So when I say that, I'm talking district offices as well. And so, you know, everything is remote. Well, you have employees, teachers or district staff, right, that have children at home and that may need their help while they're also trying to access content. And so and just everyday life, right? They're home with their children. They're cooking. They're, kids are falling, having boo-boos, running through the room, screaming, yelling, playing, having fun. Regardless, it's a challenge working from home. And so having children at home adds a layer of complexity. But I feel that people have really risen to the occasion and have worked those out. And then we're also very understanding of each other that, you know, you may be in the middle of a meeting and you have to say, hold on a second, I've got to attend to this kid, my kid just fell down or something just happened or I have something burning on the stove. So we're all dealing with the challenges of working from home, as is most of the world, right, that are dealing with this pandemic. And so it's requiring a lot of flexibility, but in some ways, I feel like we're going to come out of this stronger. For example, I was able to, normally I meet with my teachers, all the teachers at the beginning of the year for a big back to school bash rally in the gym. We have about, and not only teachers, staff and faculty, we have about 1,500 employees. Well, we did Zoom conferences with 500 at a time where people could chat in and I could speak to them. And I was able to talk to my teachers and now I can, now I'll use that tool to connect with my teachers and be able to talk to them on a more frequent basis.
That's great. I'm going to have to pause you there. We do have to go to a break. Superintendent Veronica Garcia from Santa Fe Public Schools, thank you. And this morning, we're talking with educators and elected officials about the latest coronavirus response in New Mexico. It's time for a quick break, but you can give us a call this hour, 277-5866, or tweet the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Hannah Colton. We'll be back in a minute.
Support comes from Rothstein Donatelli Law Firm, providing legal advice and representation for Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, expungement of criminal records, civil rights plaintiffs, and survivors of sexual abuse. RossDaneLaw.com.
At the Vein Center of New Mexico, patients learn about varicose vein symptoms, like tired, aching legs, and treatment options. Dr. Michael Harding and his team are proud sponsors of KUNM. More at VeinCenterNM.com.
Our thanks to those who donated during our first ever quiet drive. We appreciate your support. A big thanks to all the new sustaining members and to all the current sustaining members who increased their contributions. And to the folks who gave again for the first time in years. And to those who gave what they could. Your support was incredible. Thank you to those who provided challenge grants and to everyone who called in to help us earn the additional funds. The quiet drive's success is because of all of you. With immense gratitude, thank you.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. If you've got kids stuck at home during the pandemic, how is that going? What are you worried about as far as their schooling and their progress? Have you been hearing from their teachers or school administrators about plans to keep them learning? Give us a call this morning, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. Really happy to have on the line this morning Angela Rodriguez, who's principal at Washington Middle School in Albuquerque. Good morning, Angela.
Hello, can you hear me?
Good morning. Yes, I can.
Okay.
Thanks for joining
us, everyone.
During what's technically your spring break. How are you doing?
Hanging in there, just trying to enjoy some downtime since it has been a very busy past couple of weeks for school administrators, school leaders, and I'm sure, you know, just families as well.
Great. Well, and I do want to mention that I reached out to Albuquerque Public Schools for the show this morning to see if they would have an admin on to let us know about their instructional plan. They did not provide someone, but Angela Rodriguez, thanks for being with me. What kinds of concerns are you hearing from teachers and students right now?
From students in particular, they're really concerned about how, you know, what are they going to need to do to pass to the next grade level? For many kids who are, you know, really, really focused on their learning, they're concerned about, oh, how am I going to qualify for algebra next year? Like, they're really looking to plan ahead. And I know for our students who are either eighth graders going to high school or those seniors moving on, they're concerned about graduation, proms, all of those historical moments that come with these particular landmarks when you're going to school. For our teachers, a lot of it is that connection to their kids. How do we get our materials? When are we going to be able to get in the building? I need those essential items if I'm expected to plan. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, all of that is coming down from the top. As far as this is when we can start letting teachers in the school, only so many people at a time. So in the behind the scenes, there's a lot of folks burning their torches till different hours of the evening.
I bet.
As former Superintendent Garcia had said, or current Superintendent Garcia has said, but former secretary said, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And it's as simple for most people to say, oh, why don't they just do X, Y, or Z? But it is a logistical nightmare.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds like it. And I've heard from folks around APS that the school district has been pretty slow to respond. What kind of guidance are you getting so far from the district?
Well, I think we're taking, and I can understand where that's coming from, because most educators are very type A personalities. Like, we want our information, and we're planners, and, you know, we don't like to be caught off guard. But we're getting our guidance from PED like anybody else. And then, you know, when you have the largest district in the state of New Mexico with over 80,000 students, figuring out those logistics is what takes time. And so as quickly as we get information, principals are responding to their staffs to start developing a plan. The PED did provide us with some guidance for this continuous learning plan within each district. And, you know, I think right now the biggest focus is that connectivity, the idea of less is more. accepting that, you know, we're not going to cover all the standards that we're used to covering. Not every kid is going to perform at the same rate or make the progress that we would have hoped if we had them in our classrooms. But, you know, really extending each other grace during this time, because this is unprecedented. And I think different schools have different ideas of what they can do. But we need to be somewhat unified so that way there's continuity for families as well. And there aren't different expectations from one school to another, especially for families who have students at varying grade levels.
Mm. Are you concerned that some of your seniors won't make it to graduation this year who might have been on track before? I mean, is that a real threat right now?
Actually, I think there's probably more opportunity for students who are at risk of not graduating, because the graduation deadline has been extended for students to meet criteria.
Okay.
And so that was extended to like mid-June. And students, we will have the opportunity to show that they have met expectations and earned credits through various, trying to think of what's the appropriate word. Like they could either do a portfolio, take an end of course exam, like just different measures for assessment to determine whether or not they've earned that credit for that class in high school. Now that's what they're doing at the high school. That's definitely out of my scope because I'm at middle school, but I know those are some of the options that they're going to have. And through that extension of June, there will be that opportunity for that credit recovery. So more and more students can, you know, earn that path to graduation.
Okay. That's good to know. Thank you, Angela Rodriguez, principal at Washington Middle School in Albuquerque. Thanks for being on.
Sure. No problem.
I want to speak next to Robert Frausto, who's a teacher at Highland High School. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you holding up? How are you staying connected with students?
Well, a lot of them, stay connected with them through social media. There's an app that we use on campus called Remind, and we can send out Remind messages that way, and they can respond back. I've talked to other teachers, peers of mine, and some of them are using social media and email, stuff like that, to get in touch with their students.
Are those platforms that you already kind of use to talk to your students, or are you having to yourself learn like new technology already?
Those are platforms we already use.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are, yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, the kids don't use Zoom yet, but it's fairly easy to navigate, I've discovered.
Are there particular student needs or needs from particular students that seem most difficult to meet without that in-person interaction?
I think part of it is more the personal connection. You know, we can provide the academic stuff online, you know, but we have kids that are psychologically at risk or physically at risk. And connecting with them and making sure that they're safe on a day-to-day basis is difficult. It's almost impossible right now.
Right. Do you have any direction from the district as to how any behavioral health services or, you know, school counseling services will be offered during this time?
They haven't said anything yet, and we're expecting pretty soon. My principal, Marco Harris, has been pretty good about being in touch. But, you know, as it comes down the pike that way, we haven't heard anything about, you know, special ed and those things. Those are special problems that they're going to have to deal with.
Right, of course. What kinds of support is the district offering right now?
Well, we haven't heard anything about what we're supposed to do next. So we've all been kind of on our own. You know, yesterday I sent out an email to all my classes saying we're going to try to meet, do a Google Classroom tomorrow and stuff like that. Other teachers have started holding kind of informal classes. And we're sharing that information as we go through it, but we haven't heard much from the district yet at all.
Okay. And I want to mention just again, I did request an interview from Albuquerque Public Schools this morning. They did refuse, largest school district in the state. If you have a question about how schools are preparing, about how other state agencies or the federal government is responding to coronavirus, you can call in this morning, 277-5866. And Robert Frausto is on the line from Highland High School, a teacher. Just a last question for you this morning, Robert. What are you learning from your students during this time? I mean, I think a lot of students may be more comfortable than a lot of teachers with all this online and virtual learning environments. So are they surprising you at all?
Well, you know, they're better at it than I am, and they're quicker. They can find solutions quicker. But I'm taking classes at UNM, and
oh, great.
We're doing all of those online now. So I'm learning more from that on how, when I start doing my classes online, how I'm going to be able to do it and what's available and what's possible.
Great. Any advice for parents who may be, you know, going a little stir crazy or wondering how best to support their students during this time?
Well, when I sent out my email yesterday, I included the parents in the, you know, we're going to try to have this class or we're going to try to meet. So, I mean, I think keeping informed is important and not listening to rumors and that kind of stuff that without it being verified is especially important because people talk and then rumors start and then they disappear and it's nothing. So I guess just keeping a cool head and keeping informed is important.
Right. And that's for everyone during the crisis, huh? Well, thank you so much for that update. We'll let you go, Mr. Frausto. Thanks.
Thank you much. Appreciate it.
On the line now, I have Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales. Good morning, Lieutenant Governor.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the air and for all the information that you're providing.
Yeah, thank you. And the state announced new guidelines for COVID-19 testing just yesterday. So can you give us an update on who is eligible to get tested now, who wasn't before?
Yeah, that's correct. And I just want to say, first of all, just how grateful that we are for New Mexicans taking this seriously, understanding the importance of staying home as much as possible and only leave for essentials, and then making sure to practice social distancing. Because we've seen our numbers that have risen, we also know that we can do better. But we also want to make sure as more tests are available. The governor in her announcement a couple days ago wanted to make sure that we heard New Mexicans and that we answered the call by allowing more testing to take place. Previously, testing, because it was so limited, we wanted it to be for people who were showing symptoms of fever, dry cough, or shortness of breath. But now that has been expanded. And so if you're a household member of a person who has tested positive, we want to make sure that even though you're asymptomatic, that you can have that test available. We also want to make sure those that are in congregate settings like our rest homes or our detention centers or other facilities where there's multiple people that you have access to the test as well. And I think this is really helpful just because we want to know what are the numbers out there, how can we best treat people across the state, and early on detection, I think, is absolutely critical. So I'm glad
right.
you mentioned that.
That makes a lot of sense. And we heard from folks in Las Cruces that they had long lines for drive-up testing. Some places were running out of tests. What is the state doing to ensure that Las Cruces and other cities and towns throughout the state get enough of those tests?
And I've heard that as well. Coming from Southern New Mexico, I'm actually working out of my home in Silver City today, and I hear that as well. And so the governor's been very clear that we're going to continue to push the federal government to get us more tests, to make sure that we can have those available for all parts of the state, especially those rural communities who may not have all the services that may be afforded to larger cities. But nonetheless, every person in our state is important, including making sure we take care of all of our tribal communities and have the testing available for them as well.
Great. Well, we got an email question from Matthew, who was wondering about, long waits or potential waits to get unemployment. And he wants to know why Workforce Solutions is still only working their normal hours of 8 to 4:30 and not extending hours like, say, banks are. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that, and I have to say, I give credit to Secretary Bill McCamley, who's just working nonstop, trying to find solutions, answering calls of people all across the state. Even yesterday, it was his birthday, and I called him and asked him how his birthday's gone, and he just was just all work-minded. So appreciate him and all the staff that's working there. I do want to ensure that people know that there are a lot of unemployment benefits that are out there, but specifically to the question as far as the working hours, we want to make sure that people utilize the website. The reason why that website is so important is because you can get through quicker, but at the same time, the phone calls are just jammed. The lines are just jammed. So we want to make sure that people can utilize that website. That's jobs.state.nm.us. That's available at all times. And I want to stress for people to do that. We also have, in an order of a way to get people to have access through the lines, is there's been somewhat of a rationing approach to try to have people call in at certain times. And if you're okay with that, I can kind of give the breakdown of when people, according to their Social Securities, could call those numbers to get through quicker. If your Social Security number ends 0 to 3, call on Mondays. If yours ends from 4 to 6, call on Tuesdays. And if your Social Security number ends from 7 to 9, call on Wednesdays. If you miss any of those dates, call on Thursday or Friday. Try to get through in that way as well. But again, the best results you're going to get is doing the website at jobs.state.nm. I think that's going to be critical for people to utilize. And I will take this back and ask the question specifically about expanded working hours. That's why we do these radio shows, so we can learn from people and what they're experiencing on the ground too.
And Ellen in Albuquerque had a question. Ellen,
hi,
go ahead.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Good morning. I have a question about testing. Due to the fact, I know that there were some drive-through sites. Unfortunately, I don't drive now, and my husband doesn't either because he's blind and I'm legally blind and also wheelchair bound. But I'm curious, what is happening for those people that want to get tested? Or need it to get tested, but they don't drive, and you know they're physically able to get to a site, but the only thing that's available is either a Sun Van or the city bus. How do they do it? And then also, what is going on with the blind community as far as getting the testing, getting the help, or the disabled population as a whole?
Thanks, Ellen, for those questions. Lieutenant Governor, what are resources and ways for people who are blind to get tested or to get health care for COVID-19?
Great question. Great thought that needs to be put out there. And I appreciate this very much because I understand the challenges that are out there with people. I want to, first of all, recommend that if people are wanting to be tested or feel that they need to be tested, the first step would be call the health hotline at 1-855-600-3453. Explain the circumstance, explain what is happening, so that way they're aware of this, and then further instructions could be given. I also want to make sure that if you have access to a computer at newmexico.gov, there's information that's there, but it also gives you the opportunity as far as people that may, they can connect you with people who are wanting to volunteer, people want to assist with transportation, with other types of resources. That newmexico.gov website will be helpful. Along with this phone number, and I want to stress this for non-medical, these are the type of questions that could be asked, 1-833-551-0518. I will take this back to all of our communities, because what we've seen within this crisis is that it's brought out the best of many New Mexicans, and many volunteers want to help. They just need a cause. They want to have something that they can be a part of. And this
absolutely,
is
and we see that in our communities all over the state. We do have to go to a break. Lieutenant Governor, please stay on the line. We are talking with elected officials this morning about coronavirus response in New Mexico. Give us a call, 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We'll be back in a minute.
Support provided by Weekly Alibi, Albuquerque's news weekly and a source for local news, arts, entertainment, and culture. On stands every Thursday or at alibi.com.
Support comes from Instituto Cervantes, offering remote Spanish language classes for adults and teens using web-based teleconference software. Spring sessions start April 13th. Complete details at 505-724-4777.
Native businesses and economic development for entire tribes are thrust into uncertainty because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Predictions vary on how long stores will remain shuttered and when people can begin buying and selling goods and services again. We'll explore that and the federal stimulus package on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Hannah Colton. We're talking coronavirus, and we've got state and federal officials on the line. What's keeping you up at night? Are state and federal governments doing enough to provide resources right now? Join the conversation, 277-5866. Now, Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales on the line from Silver City. We know that Albuquerque has the bulk of the state's hospitals, and Governor Lujan Grisham has requested an additional 248-bed Army hospital here. What about hospitals in Las Cruces, in rural areas? Are they prepared to handle an influx of cases? Do they have enough personal protective equipment?
First of all, yeah, we're fortunate that the governor advocated so early to make sure the federal government knew that we needed a hospital here for additional beds, and that was approved this week. We don't know the details of where that's going to be or the specifics of it, but we'll get more information from them. But all across the state of New Mexico, our healthcare workers, our hospitals, all of our clinics are so vital to taking care of people across the state. I know that having the experience myself personally working in a hospital of just the challenges that are in place, we are concerned that the crisis that has hit not only has done it from a healthcare perspective, but also from an economic perspective. We have to provide resources to our hospital because whether it's PPE and the shortage of that, of taking care of our healthcare workers, to the finance piece of it, I am concerned that our hospitals are really in a difficult spot. And so I know some of that stimulus money coming from the federal government is going to be there to assist our New Mexico hospitals. I hope that we can do more from the state as well to assist and keep those doors available for those who need the services.
And there are federal funds allocated to tribes around the country for COVID-19 response. And my understanding is that part of that allocation also went to states to distribute to tribes. So how much of that money did New Mexico get? And did you send the full amount to tribes directly, or do you still have to do that?
And I appreciate that. Just yesterday, I was on a call with our Secretary of Indian Affairs, Lynn Trujillo, with our Navajo Nation, and making sure that we can get all the information necessary from the stimulus package that comes in for all the communities, including our tribal communities. One thing that I can say is that we're grateful for the collaboration that we've had. While we respect sovereignty, we also know that we have to work collaboratively to ensure that we're going to get all the resources out there. As more details come in of what that stimulus package has as the dollars flow into the state, we want to make sure all that the tribal communities are entitled to, that they get that, because we see the numbers there on a rise.
Okay, so still waiting for disbursement of those funds.
Correct.
And on Monday, Governor Lujan Grisham said that coronavirus could, quote, wipe out some tribes. I've heard from folks who say that comment was very poorly worded and disregards, you know, the resilience of the Navajo Nation and of all tribal nations. What's your response?
You know, the governor's been a champion for our tribal communities, as indicated the work that's been done and the collaboration. We absolutely want to make sure that we continue working with them. That's why I was on the call yesterday with the White House. And I want to be clear that that call happened with people across the country because the governor flagged to President Trump on their call on Monday that that our tribal communities need support, that we need more resources, that we see the numbers that are increasing. In no way was that to be taken as something that showed that there wasn't resiliency or there wasn't support for the tribal communities. We absolutely do that, and that was a good call yesterday to advocate further for the necessary resources out there, whether it's field clinics, whether it's information that needs to be shared from the federal government to the state to our tribal communities, or whether making sure that we can have more tests available. We're here and strongly in support of all of our communities.
Okay, well, I want to take a call from Donald, who is calling from Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor Morales. I want to echo your remarks about Governor Lujan Grisham. I think we're very lucky to have her here doing the work that she's doing. I'm also want to just point out that some of the unsung heroes are working in the Department of Health, Secretary Kunkel, and particularly in the epidemiology division, Dr. Landon and Dr. Smelser. They're the ones that are really doing a lot of the heavy lifting here. I worked for 20 years at Public Health in New Mexico, a little more than 12 years as the state director of HIV/AIDS programs. I am very impressed, and I'm glad you mentioned it earlier, sir, the good work that New Mexico is doing in, with regard to public messaging efforts to get folks to stay home and to practice social distancing. I am concerned, however, that almost entirely this messaging is targeted to English speakers. I'm a consumer of Spanish language here in Spanish language locally affiliated radio and television stations here in Albuquerque. While there is COVID-19 coverage, one might think that it isn't quite here yet. I can see from my garden, for example, some of my neighbors haven't got the message yet.
That is a great question. Thanks for that, Donald. And Lieutenant Governor Morales, what are you doing to get the word out and information out timely in Spanish? Or could more be done?
Yeah, I appreciate that. And Donald, thank you, first of all, for all your service and the work that you've done. You're absolutely correct that those heroes that are working day in and day out, making sure that policy is set with everyone in mind, is taken and making sure they give get credit because they truly deserve that. But absolutely, as far as on the communities that are Spanish speaking, I know how important that is. I've worked closely with not only our immigrant communities and our groups out there, but making sure that we can do more to not only have the messaging done in English, but also in Spanish. So actually this week, I'll be recording more radio spots in Spanish to get that out. And I would ask Donald and others to please get us information how we can get this information in Spanish out to our communities, because we can always do more. And I know from a conference call that I had earlier in this week with over 300 immigrant groups that were supporting, bilingual groups, educators, healthcare workers, it really showed that when we did that Facebook Live event, that it was something that was needed and we can always do more. So I'm up for it. As a matter of fact, like I said, I'll be doing some radio spots coming today and tomorrow.
Great. We'll look forward to hearing those. Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales, thank you so much for being on the line this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Now, our last guest this morning is Senator Tom Udall, Congressman from New Mexico. Where are we reaching you this morning? Good morning.
Yeah, this is Hannah, right?
Yes. You are on the air.
Great to be with you, Hannah. You're reaching me in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'm at my home. I flew into New Mexico only 5 days ago, so I'm self-quarantined at my home, and friends and family are helping us stay supplied with food. And my wife Jill's here with me too.
Great. Glad to hear that you're safe and supported there. So tell us about the $2 trillion relief package. How does this package help New Mexicans who are most vulnerable to this pandemic?
Well, I first of all, want to just say that you know, this is a difficult and unprecedented time for New Mexico and the nation. We've passed, and I'm going to get right into it now, a major emergency response bill that's going to provide immediate relief and should be implemented to provide emergency relief to struggling New Mexico families. I've worked hard to make sure this was a bill that put a priority on helping working people, small businesses, hospitals, healthcare workers, and Native communities. This is what the bill does, to give you a little more detail here. It gives immediate relief to working people in New Mexico with direct cash payments and with greatly expanded unemployment insurance.
Is that the $1,200 stipend? Is that what you're the cash payment?
Yes, that's absolutely. That's exactly what I'm talking about in the direct cash payments, Hannah.
Now, who's eligible to receive that and who isn't? Can you give us some details on that?
You bet. Anybody, Hannah, that filed a tax return in 2018, 2019, and Treasury has reversed the position because they were trying to say if you haven't filed a tax return, that you had to file one to get the payment. And yesterday they announced they were reversing that position and they were going to go off all of the people they had in the IRS and get the payments out that way. And we made a very strong point with them. The point of this was to get dollars in the hands of people who are really struggling and get it to them quickly. The other couple of things that this bill does that are very important, and it's a very extensive bill and covers a lot of areas, but I'm trying to just cover the broad brush here. It gives emergency help to small businesses. It pumps major resources into our hospitals and healthcare system, and it will give New Mexico and local governments reimbursement to the tune of $1.25 billion. And it supports the nation's tribes, setting aside $10 billion for Native communities, which are on the front line. So that's a short summary there. We're doing everything we can. I've been on calls all the period that I've been home talking to federal officials. You know, the hot spot for New Mexico is up on the Navajo Reservation. I was on the phone yesterday with the head of the Indian Health Service to try to make sure he understood the emergency nature of what's going on there. As many people know, President Nez has said that this is an unprecedented public health disaster. There are seven times more cases than anywhere in Indian country up there on the Navajo Nation, and it's a much higher rate than New Mexico in terms of the percentage on the virus that has been tested already.
Soon can people living in tribal communities expect to see that assistance? I mean, how is that going to be dispersed, and what resources will it provide?
Well, first of all, targeting the tribal communities. As you know, there's an infrastructure set up right now where you have an Indian Health Service, you have a variety of programs in the federal government that are helping, whether it's farm programs or housing programs. And then in addition to that, there are federal agencies carrying out the trust responsibilities, the BIA, which is the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Bureau of Indian Education, and several other federal agencies. So we are getting the hands into the people that are on the ground right now. You know, the Indian Health Service has a number of hospitals around New Mexico, but they're just like New Mexico. They're going to need the surge capability. And that's what I was pushing Admiral Wiaki, who's the head of the Indian Health Service, to do, and then talking with other health officials that are a part of this. And we believe that they are going to surge in the same time period that New Mexico is going to surge, which you probably heard is between about the 10 days into April until about 2 weeks into May. So the people in Washington need to get the money out there on the ground to the entities that are working right now and have been working every day to help tribes.
And does the package provide any funds for unemployment insurance or the SNAP program, food stamps?
It does. And I would call the unemployment, it's unemployment on steroids. We have actually, this is a big provision in the bill, pushed so that people that normally wouldn't have been on unemployment. For example, you all know about the people in the new economy, what people call the gig economy. That is people working two or three different self-employed or independent contractors, or you might even call them freelancers. I hear some of the young people using that term. They're included in unemployment, and we're sending significant, significant dollars out to the unemployment systems in the state. And I think the governor and the lieutenant governor, Howie Morales, that was just previously on, they know the money's coming, and so they're ramping up to get the money out there.
Great. And what sort of assistance for any small business owners who might be listening, what sort of assistance can they expect and when?
Well, small businesses and nonprofits under 500 people will be eligible for $10 million loans, each of them. Those loans turn into grants if companies keep employees on the payroll. And my office just put out a guide on how small businesses can access and get a hold of these resources and keep their employees so that after, you know, what we're really trying to do here is give the assistance so when we get through these peaks and the public health officials tell us we can go back to work, that all of those people have been taken care of and are ready to get back to work and get the economy up and running.
All right. Well, we are out of time for the hour. Thank you so much for being on the line, Senator Tom Udall, calling from Santa Fe.
Hannah, always a pleasure. Let me know if you need additional information. I've got a great communication staff. Cheers. Take care.
We appreciate it. Thank you also to our other guests, Robert Frausto, a teacher at Highland High School, Angela Rodriguez, Veronica Garcia, and Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales. Thank you to everyone who called in and sent questions today. If you missed part of today's show, you can listen on KUNM.org or subscribe to the Let's Talk New Mexico podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are all coronavirus coverage all the time right now because it's all that we're all thinking about. And that coverage also includes our daily podcast. It's excellent. It's called Your New Mexico Government. You can find that on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you find your podcasts at YourNMGov. And it's also airing nightly this week at 8 p.m. So tune in after the NPR programming that runs through 8. Our engineer for the show is Marino Spencer. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls this morning. Bryce Dix live tweeted the program from self-quarantine. Thanks for helping keep us safe, Bryce. And Ty Bannerman produced today's show. I'm Hannah Colton, executive producer of the show. Thank you so much for tuning in to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.